It looks like the AI is currently active and now the recording is as well.
Oh, it said recording pause, and I don't know when it paused, so I'm sorry about that.
Is the roll
All right.
call finished? I'm sorry.
Yep. Well, we just have Will Califano, your UCAT representative, and Jeff Collins is not here.
And Kathy Nolan.
Okay. And we got a few guests, Laura Petit, Tony Rozier, and Kathy Nolan. So I guess we could also count Tony as a UCAT representative up on the non-voting support, and we could put her up there for next time. All right, awesome. So next item on the agenda. Does everyone have the agenda? Anyone having any issues with that? Okay. The next item on the agenda is the resources document and the TRIAC folder. I just wanted to make sure everybody has that. Maybe you can open it and save it on your computer or add it to your drive so that you have it. Maybe I could just show you really quick. Do a little screen share. Okay, I'm just going to do a little screen share. So the folder has the agendas, all the agendas for TRIAC in this subfolder. Then it has other relevant documents. UCAT report proposal, which I'm going to mention next. A copy of the County Executive's report, and UCAT had a section of that on page 184. Zoom login info, because we're going to be using the same Zoom info. So if you lose it, you can find it there. Resources, this has just want to see, and you can, if anyone wants to add anything to this resources document, just let me know. But basically, this has the legislation that created this, our website, some county resources, the route optimization plan, human services transportation plan, long range transportation plan, green fleet policy, the county pay dashboard, where you can look up the pay of each employee in the county, UCAT website, UCAT facility site selection plan, and then the resolution establishing TRIAC, and then we have some model advisories that I'm going to be adding to this as well. So that's oh, I thought I wasn't sharing this tab, but anyway, so this is the resources here. I just wanted to make sure everyone has access to that. And I'll stop the screen share. All right, so I think that's it for that agenda item. And I just wanted to quickly mention that we are working on a draft for recommendations for annual and quarterly reports from UCAT. So some specific things that we would like to specific piece of information that we would like to have. So we're working on that. Dylan and Michael Kondransky have been collaborating with me on that as well. So that's kind of in progress, and we're definitely going to be soliciting input from all of you and other relevant people. So any questions about that? We have a link to that draft right in there. Any comments? Okay, very good. Okay, the next item, the agenda. I think this is actually old business, the comptroller survey, which Joe, you mentioned you mentioned at our first meeting the idea of having the comptroller do a survey. And I did actually, Phil got us in touch with Marks Gallagher. So she's potentially interested in doing that.
The background to that was a couple of years ago, the legislature created a position for a specific person that was added to the comptroller's office, and one of the that was presented as something that person could do was to do surveys with UCAT or not-for-profits that are contracted with the county to provide services to get an idea right from the people getting the services what they think. So often, you know, we're making decisions in the county, especially in the legislature, upon with talking to department heads about what they're providing, and we rarely end up hearing directly from the people that are receiving the services. And I think it'd be a valuable way to really get a feel for what the masses are feeling they'd like to see with UCAT. So that's why I brought that up, and I think March would probably be willing to hear us out on whether that would be doable. Obviously, we'd have to work with UCAT, and I'd imagine the drivers in some way on that.
Yeah. And March mentioned, and I emailed her, she mentioned they have some trouble kind of getting people, you know, to actually fill out the survey. So that's something we could talk about, is maybe we could actually have more kind of hands-on, feet on the ground kind of approach to getting the surveys done, potentially. So yeah, March is definitely open to hearing from us about it. Any other thoughts on that from anyone?
We might be able to supplement that information with some of the information that the transportation planning process has gathered on the route optimization studies and things like that. There's quite a bit of feedback. So maybe in thinking about what questions we want to ask, we can look at what's already been gathered and see what we think hasn't really been gathered. And I think that the idea of having members of this group or others that you recruit help with getting the survey filled out is a good one. We get much better results on trail surveys if we send people out to the trail and ask for the survey. But if we do that, you know, on the buses, then you really have a sample that is only the people that are already riding the buses. So that's something else to think of in terms of survey design has its own, you can do it in a way that gets you a lot of good information. There's also some pitfalls to avoid. Only asking people who already have access to the service, whether they have access to the service.
I think also you can consider online things, because there is Wi-Fi on the buses. So having an online survey and doing some sort of print campaign that gives people a QR code and their phone goes right to it, and they're sitting on the bus anyway, and they'll fill it out, you know, and then they may, and you can ask them to share it with their neighbors or whatever, you know. Those are really easy ways to get people to access it, because they're there on the bus anyway and the Wi-Fi's there most of the time.
I agree.
So a QR code would just, you know, they'll do it. Everybody's got a phone.
We could put it right on with the bus schedule, perhaps, or something. That'd probably be the way to go.
You could print the QR code and put it right on the bus in one of those little places where you can put advertising and stuff, and it's right there, and people can just click on it.
The last time we did that, we printed cards, and anyone who wanted them could take them so they could fill the survey out on the bus or as they chose. Good idea.
All right. Okay, so that's an idea. I don't know if we want to kind of put a pin in it for the future, or if anyone is interested in kind of working on that now.
So you need the survey first, right? Do you have the survey?
You mean the surveys that have already been done?
Yeah, are we talking about making a new survey or recycling one?
Yeah, I think we're talking about a new survey, and I think, yeah, a good place to start would just be reviewing, like Kathy said, reviewing the surveys that have been done in the, you know, the route optimization, the human services plan. There have been some surveys done, so we could kind of look at those and do an analysis and think about what other information we want to obtain.
You know, we have a fairly large group here. Perhaps, I mean, if you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to, for two or three people to kind of be assigned the task of coming up and then presenting next meeting with their thoughts on. We could certainly have everyone email those two or three people as well with any thoughts that they would think we'd want to ask as far as what we're going to do with this survey. But if we're going to get it done, we ought to. Somebody's got to be working on it.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to be on in that group, but I definitely wouldn't want to do it alone. And also, we're missing four people, so some of those four people could also be interested. But is anyone else interested in working on this survey at this point, doing a little work on it? Can ask.
I don't mind
doing it either.
You don't mind doing it, Gemma? Okay.
Yeah, I think Greg said that he wouldn't mind. So
I don't mind.
Okay. All right. So Greg, Gemma, Keith said survey subcommittee. Laura said, I'm sorry, I'm a little behind on this. Laura said, is this committee going to prepare some survey questions? Yeah, in my mind, I think we would first want to review the survey, what the surveys have done, and do a little synopsis, a little analysis to present to the group, and then we could have a group discussion about, you know, what we think about the survey so far and what we'd like to see. How does that sound to people?
Sounds good to me.
I was looking how to find to raise my hand, but
okay, awesome.
I was just thinking
so
a good
we'll be
first
in touch,
step.
Greg and Gemma.
Oh.
Was Keith, were you saying something?
Yeah, can you
anything
hear me?
Anything else about that?
Can you,
yep,
Ella,
go ahead,
can you hear
Keith.
Sorry, I was just
I can
thinking,
hear you.
So the first step could just be to look at the surveys that have been done.
Yep. Good idea.
Okay. Yep. That's good. Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Okay, awesome. Anything else about the survey? All right, great. Next, we have the Safe Streets for All grant. That was suggested by Rose, who is not here. So I don't know if you or Tony, if anyone has an update about the Safe Streets for All grant.
That grant, who's ever putting it in, I have no idea.
Okay.
That's not coming from our department. I have a feeling that it's coming out of the planning department or the executive's office, but that has not come out of our office, nor do we have anything to do with that. Sorry, I can't help you out on that one.
Okay. Thank you for that information. Okay, so we can probably put that into the old business. Safe Street, City of Kingston, said Laura. I'm not sure what you mean. Do you mean, does the City of Kingston
Yeah, she may be saying something I was thinking, but I wasn't sure of it, which is that
okay.
I think Safe Streets for All grant either comes from or has been brought forward by the City of Kingston's Complete Streets group or Safe Streets group. So they might be good contact people. I mean, if Rose, when she's here, Rose can give all the information on that. I think she's
Rose knows a lot more than me, or that's for sure. All right. Dylan says it's a Safe Streets for All grant that municipalities can apply for. It's a federal program. Yeah, I think that's right.
And Kingston maybe is applying for it or has applied for it in the past, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. The deadline is June 26th, so I believe we'll hear soon. Okay, that's coming right up. Anything else about that Safe Streets for All grant? Awesome. Okay, next we have updates for the route optimization study. And that's me. So I emailed Brian Slack a few weeks ago, and he said they're basically still they're still kind of testing out the routes, and they don't have a date. I was trying to find out what the date would be for the next public session that they have, because they had one public session last year, this winter maybe, and they were in their plan, they have another public session that looks like it's supposed to be this summer, but they don't have a date yet. So
I can fill you in a little bit.
Okay. Great.
So we meet every Thursday for the route optimization study, and they had two public meetings last year. The second public meeting was, the first public meeting went over all of the surveys that we received, and then the consultants took into account what people wanted and where people wanted to go. So once they had all that information, they gathered that with the ridership of our routes, and they came up with two different scenarios for each route that they proposed. And that was the second public meeting. So now once they went through and had another survey and had people vote on which route seemed to be the best option, they then took into consideration those surveys and came up with the routes. So we tested out, once they came up with the routes, they gave us a street-by-street format, and I personally went out with one of the drivers, and we ran the exact same route that we had and tweaked it with street names and times, and some of the times were pretty extensive, so some of those routes are going to need to be tweaked. However, with the route optimization study, they extended it a little longer. Hopefully it will be done somewhere in October. But I think what everyone has to keep in mind is once this route optimization study is complete, it's not going to be implemented all at once. It's a route study that they are going to implement over the course of 3 years. And that was in the scope of work. However, at this time, I feel that there are some tweaks that need to be made to the system to help us accommodate the routes with the number of buses that we have and also the number of drivers. The routes that are proposed are kind of long-term, and it's a vision of what everybody wants to see. So once those come out, like I said, it won't be like a total, our service is changing overnight, but it will take a few years to get all of that implemented. If anybody has any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay, Greg?
I just want to say to Tony, that a lot of constituents love the app because they can see where the buses are. They say that's very helpful. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Sometimes we have a little glitch, but most of the time it works.
All right, good. Okay. Dylan, did you put this in status of NPL CL re Route 32 developments?
Yes.
Work on that.
So I just wanted to bring to light, there's currently three different housing developments that are like multifamily apartments that are happening on Route 32 right at the edge of the village and the town. So those are serviced by, I believe, the New Paltz Loop and then sometimes the CL and then some routes, I think like the W. I haven't been on the buses for a little bit, but that corridor is very, like, pretty integral to UCAT, and I've heard rumors through the grapevine that the New Paltz Loop, usually when they're short-staffed, it's kind of like the first one to go just based on ridership, and if there does have to be any cuts in the future, it may be upon chopping block. So I just wanted to establish a point that there's going to be three apartment buildings there, one south of campus, and there's going to be a very large demand, both from students and also families, for transportation around New Paltz, especially because supermarkets are on the opposite end of the village. And I just want to make sure that with everything happening in terms of UCAT, that that's considered in the future plans.
So you're absolutely correct. Right now, the New Paltz Loop, we run it every single day of the week. It runs from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. We have about maybe about 30 passengers per day in that entire day on those. On the weekends, we run the NPL on Saturdays and Sundays. We get a total of 35 people total for the weekend. So, yes, that is one of the first routes to go. However, because the KPL and the UPL also service that area, the UPL covers the NPL route, so there's never really a lull in service. They go the exact same places. And if somebody needs to go to the grocery store, they certainly go there. The time limit might be a little bit longer, but we have proposed, myself and some other staff members, another route that will pick up the CL, the W, and the X. And the way that we combine them, there will be more frequent service to New Paltz. And even without the NPL loop, it will be more efficient. Right now, I think what's happening is that there's a lot of downtime on that route because there's not a lot of passengers. However, beginning, and I don't know if you know this, because it was just pretty much dropped on our laps this week with this high heat wave, that the NPL, you won't have to worry, isn't going anywhere this summer because it will now be doing the loop plus going to the Ulster County Pool, which just opened. Yes. That press release should be out in the next 2 days.
And then, okay. I just have two quick things I wanted to add. The first is, in terms of New Paltz, I also just wanted to establish the point that a lot of people have to make the trip from Kingston DSS to Kingston Plaza, then to New Paltz, to get to the hotels that are on the east end for temporary assistance. And there's been a very big issue with people being able to get up to trailways to make the transfer, but that's something that I hope we could work on. I just want to provide my own personal background quickly. I was a Climate Corps intern in 2023. And I did not have a vehicle, so I was actually using the MPL on a daily basis, and it let me do my internship, it let me work at personnel, social services. It was a bit of a tricky way to get from a New Paltz to DSS for my job, but that route, I mean, the fact that it was open every day allowed me to have a full-time job, but I also understand the reality that it's not very frequently used.
Also, when that happens, We really do try to accommodate everyone if we can. So if we would get complaints about someone not being able to get somewhere, we usually try to work that out so that we can provide that service.
We'd love to talk about it in the future.
Yeah, I would just underscore that point that if there's a route that you need or a destination and you need, calling UCAT to find out, especially if there's a change that's proposed. And I just recently found this list of food pantries in all of the different areas of the county that are accessible by UCAT. And so, like, I think there's a lot of information about what UCAT does that this group can help get out to people. And then we increase the ridership, and then those routes, you know, justify themselves.
Flourish, yeah.
I just want to share quickly, that map is actually fairly outdated. I tried getting to update it in 2023 when I was an intern, and I never had time to do it. So that's something that I want to get done, but I've had to prioritize paying jobs and stuff.
So maybe we can get a new Climate Corps intern to work on it, and you can help them. That would be great, as I'd love this to be up to date. And I thought that maybe updating it after the route optimization starts would be good, you know, because we can point to things that will
where they
in the future.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to mention that I think with the new Pulse Loop, I think two factors that, well, there's a few factors that I think probably contribute to low ridership. One is that it gets canceled all the time, so it kind of becomes a doom loop of it's getting canceled, so people don't rely on it, and then, you know, people don't ride it, so then it, you know, it keeps going. The other thing is it doesn't run very frequently. It kind of varies between every half hour to every hour to every hour and a half. It's not very consistent.
There's a schedule for it, so it should run on a consistent schedule. And
I mean in terms of, like, yeah. I don't mean it's not running consistently. I just mean it's not you have to look at the schedule. It doesn't just come. And, you know, I think optimally for, relatively New Paltz compared to the rest of the county is relatively dense. So I think something that was really more frequent, like every 15 minutes, you know, then you just kind of go, you show up at the bus stop and you know it's going to be there within 15 minutes. And I think that kind of consistency would be ideal. All right, Greg, go ahead.
Is there a policy for bus cancellations? Is there a certain amount of time, or can it just be canceled spur of the moment?
Well, if we have no drivers to drive, we have to look and see which routes would be less, have less of an impact, like than canceling the KS bus or the EU bus or the blue, yellow city buses. But there's not really a time limit. Like this morning, we had three no-shows. What do you do at 4:45 in the morning? So, you know, our bus service starts at, we come in at 4:45. Drivers start coming in at 5. First buses go out at 5:30. When those people call off, it's hard to get somebody to come right in. And right now with our staff, we are short. Between FMLA, vacations, call outs, it's a difficult situation. We have 15 open part-time positions where in the past UCAT would fill them with part-time drivers, and they would be there and be able to fill in right away. They would be scheduled. However, we have no applicants that want to work part-time. Right now on our schedule, we have two part-time drivers and they work the weekends. So everyone wants a full-time job.
Have we discussed more full-time positions?
So in my budget this year, I took some of those 15 positions and asked to have them converted into four more full-time drivers, and also sent out a request to combine some of the routes that will allow us to condense a couple of the routes together, have the routes that double kind of like double service, and that would save us some drivers. So we're trying everything that we can to make our routes work with the drivers that we have. But another hard thing for UCAT is that the drivers have a union contract. And prior to myself being director, I came to UCAT in 2019 from City Bus when they merged. And then in 2022, we did have another director from out of state, and he had every driver bid on hours. And those hours did not coincide with the routes that we have. And I think this is something that's good for everybody to know as a background. So when we want to switch a route or a driver, we are held to the hours that they bid on. So if a driver bid on on 5 to 1, right, we can't put them on 7 to 3.
So is this being dealt with in the new contract? Has this
so
been
what will
Jim
happen?
Carina is on this or what?
Yeah, everybody's pretty much on it. What will happen is once we change the routes, that will be enough for us to change those hours.
Without a new you can inside this contract, even though it's
correct.
Over.
Correct. Once you do a total route change, then we can do a total rebid of the hours or routes or however we want to do it. I prefer no bids, but they like them. I feel like everybody should be able to drive every route.
But that could be dealt with theoretically in this contract that's coming up?
To be honest with you, I'm not part of those contract negotiations, so I don't exactly know what they're...
Do we know about Dutchess County or surrounding counties, whether they bid for, they do it this way, how it was done this past time, or whether it's more open in their contract?
Dutchess County, when I've spoken to them in the past, they do it by seniority as you come in, and I don't think you get a choice on your hours, but I would say I'm not totally sure what their contract says.
Okay. I mean, I think we should be very fair to the drivers, especially with pay.
But we have to
give you some leeway, I would think, to make sure all these routes are being driven.
So what happened was in 2022 when Lauren Johnson was at UCAT, he changed all of the routes, and the union allowed him to have a rebid because he was changing all of the routes. However, he didn't take into consideration a lot of the routes that went to New Paltz. So those routes, we try to cover the best that we can with the hours that we have. Like there's not enough drivers that come in early.
One last question.
Sure.
It sounds like there was a lot of, it was very difficult to fill the part-time positions. Have you had any difficulty filling full-time? Do you have consistent vacancies with the full-time, or that's been something you've been able to fill?
Well, so right now we only have one vacant full-time position, and it's only been in probably the last 6 months that we've filled the final positions. I think we've filled 4 or 5 positions, and honestly, the drivers that we have recently hired are really good drivers. And I agree with you on the pay. I think that the drivers are underpaid for what they put up with on the buses. And I think we would be able to keep them longer. Like, we just had one driver leave to go be an HMEO at DPW because they make more money. So I think that a couple step raises.
HMEO?
Excuse me?
What's an HMEO?
Heavy machine equipment operator.
Thank you.
Okay. Keith, go ahead.
Thanks. Just two quick questions. I was wondering, what is the maximum hours for part-time and what is the wage difference between part-time hours and full-time hours?
So as a part-timer, you would come in at an entry level. It's $23.86. You still get the same step raises every year as everyone else. You can work up to a maximum of 39 hours a week. You don't have to. You can work 17 or up to 39. Once a part-timer works so many weeks of what they would consider less than half or less than full time, then the county is obligated to give them health insurance after so many hours.
And the full time pay rate is the same for full time?
They just don't get they're not in the union, so they don't get their step raises.
I see.
I'm not sure Ellen might be having an issue, but Gemma, did you have something you want to add?
Yeah, I just have a question. So is there a difference in when you spoke with, well, I don't know if you spoke to them about this, but Dutchess County, for example, like, is the pay more? Like, do they, well, let me not even put that, I'm sure, maybe. How are they doing with staff? Like, is there a big difference? Do they have, are they short staff like we are? Or
there's a national bus driver shortage, so yes, they have issues too. And I think that with Dutchess County, they run until like 2-3 in the morning, and I think that that's an issue for some of the drivers that do not want to work those late hours.
Okay, and I think that there is, I believe, like pretty much a definite pay raise issue. How is that being rectified? Or is it not getting, what's going on with that? Because I know that's why a lot of people are going to, like, the schools. I do know that.
So they did give the drivers a two-grade level increase. So they went from a grade 8 to a grade 10. However, that starting salary is still only $23.86 an hour.
Yeah, and I know the schools, like, to work for the schools nowadays, they start you at 33. So, but, you know, their hours, obviously, full-time. So I know that's a huge difference, and I know that from someone who is a driver. So, like, if you job, obviously, the company, not necessarily for the school because they don't really have that anymore, but I know that's a huge difference. So I can understand why if someone wants to drive, why they would do that. But I know you guys do have great benefits from what I've heard for full-time employees, but, like, that's definitely been stressed quite a bit. But, yeah, so, I mean, I guess I'm just, like I said, I know there's a shortage, and I've seen a shortage, and I've been told that there's a shortage, so I do understand that. But I guess, do you think it's a matter of, like, the part-time issue where, like, people want to get full-time? And, I mean, because I've honestly, I'm just being completely honest, I've never heard of part-time people working 39 hours. Like, that's usually full-time, like 35 and above is considered full-time. 39, you're definitely, you know, a full-time employee. That's
right. So what the part-timers would do is say we needed them 1 week. They can work up to that. I'm not saying they do. If they only want to work 17 hours a week, that's all we schedule them. Because some of the drivers that are part-time are also school bus drivers.
So there's no, like there's not like a, for example, like if you're a part-time employee, like there's no say, there isn't anything saying, okay, you must work 15 hours or 20 hours a week. There's nothing like that. Like, there's no cutoff. Like, okay, can work less than such and such amount of time to be a part-time employee.
Correct.
That's part of the problem. That's part of the problem. I could tell you that right now. Who wouldn't want that job, just being honest with you?
Well, they don't get benefits.
No, I know that, but if I had opportunity as a part-time worker to say, this week I want to work 10 hours, and next week I may work 15, and this hours I just want to work 5.
Well, because they don't get the choice of what they want, so it's just what we have coverage for, what we need coverage for. Say someone's on vacation for a week, so that week they may work a little more hours than the next week. So they are basically fill-ins for what we have.
Oh, so they don't have, like, for example, like, you don't have any part-time workers who have, like, you know, even if it's, let's just say, you have the morning route for, you know, the KPL, I don't even know half those things, but you don't have, like, the part-time workers don't have things like that?
We did when we had more part-timers. So we have part-timers now just on the weekends. We have two, and they work Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
So they work 20 hours.
Okay.
I just had a thought that I think it would be really interesting to, like, create a comparison or even say, like, our benefits are worth, you know, this much amount of money, you know, because it is, I think people see the higher hourly pay for the school bus, but there's no benefits, and they kind of say, oh, the school bus drivers make so much more, but it's not necessarily true because of benefits. Okay, I just want to look at the comments. I lost what Laura said. Laura said, isn't a shop steward or union liaison part of these negotiations? If drivers want set routes, that could be part of the new bargaining agreement.
Who is the liaison?
Then Dylan said, the union contracts have some different rules where if you work less than I can't see the last part of what the
more
comment
than
says.
Half time.
If you work less than MTHT, more than half time, the county isn't required to provide benefits. Laura said, Indeed says, school bus drivers make between $27 and $30, $32 an hour in Mid-Hudson. County drivers in Mid-Hudson make about $5 less. Okay, and then Bridget, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, not even ask, just comment, and for Tony, being on a rural route that is long, you know, like I get on the bus in Pine Hill and I'm on the bus for 55 minutes, I think, or so to get to Kingston, which is not that much longer than to drive. So it's fine. And I just want to say that the bus drivers that are on the Z route that go through rural up to where I am are phenomenal. And it is a route that you really have to understand in order to drive, because 28 is horrendous. And, you know, and I can only speak to the Z route. I understand this. All the other routes have things going on. But as far as the route I take, it's a really dangerous highway. And there are a lot of people that hail the bus just from standing on the side of the road. And so new drivers, like the regular drivers, I have to say, they are, you know, they're gifts to you, you, and to everybody in the community, because they're phenomenal. Because they're also social workers and tourist guides and, you know, just health checkers. Like, they do an awful lot. But in terms of just the regular stuff, like, you know, one day I got on the bus and the driver, you know, was like, came through too fast and was going facing the wrong direction, coming back through town. So people who like look out from wherever they are, they judge the bus's direction on catching it, right? Like, because there's still another spot, whatever. But like, that's a local, you know, more of a local thing, because it's not really, yeah, there is a set route in town, but people flag it down. And if they don't know, they drive so fast. And one time I tried to say something to a driver, and he said, oh, well, don't talk to me because I'm the mechanic, you know? And other times there have been drivers who really just don't have the patience, and so they squeal to a stop. They put the passenger in jeopardy on 28. They put the bus in jeopardy. They put the other drivers on 28 in jeopardy because they're driving too fast on 28 thinking that they can do that, right? So what I'm saying is, like, to have something in place for those drivers to understand the things they have to pay attention to, because the regular drivers know those things, so they know to drive a little slowly when they're approaching certain areas because there are regular people that get on, or even...
I agree with you that some of the new drivers may not know the routes that well, and maybe the buses, but even Will can attest to this. We have a driver monitoring system on the bus. If they go over the speed limit or have a harsh brake, or Will, you can follow up on that. We get an alert, and actually we get a report. So once that happens, that's a way that we help, that helps us out with training for the drivers. And I'm not going to say that every single driver is out there being, you know, on his best behavior or not getting razzed or not knowing the route, but we do try our best to monitor what they do and try to retrain them in the event that those things happen. And feedback from what you're telling me is great, because we have great drivers on the bus and they love their passengers and they love their job. And sometimes they get frustrated, and sometimes it's a long day, and sometimes everybody's yelling at them on the bus, but feedback like that is good. But I do have to say that we do have those measures in place to monitor that. And Will can give you a little bit of a quick.
Yeah, we do. We have real-time telematics going on in the buses, not only to let us know what's happening with the bus, but we have audio and video recording going at all times. So the telematics will tell us if there's a G-force device in the bus. It will tell us if they slam on the brake hard, if they go around a turn. The system also has AI. It'll tell us if the driver has rolled a stop sign or is even trying to operate the tablet while they're driving. If they turn their head a certain way, the AI picks up all these things. It notifies us, and then we have retrainings that we do. We will go over policies with the drivers. We'll work with the drivers and try to, you know, make them more aware. We do a lot of defensive driving, and we do a lot of identifying safety hazard training to try to make things better.
I think that, Will, it's really a matter of, as far as the route that I'm talking about, that the drivers are aware that there are people that are going to be flagging them down on a very busy main road that where people drive fast. And so somehow, if there's a way to just give them a heads up, like, whether it's a regular route driver or somebody, but there aren't designated spots along Route 28 from Pine Hill to Woodstock, you know, so, and there are a lot of people that stand on the side of the road.
Over the years, I've driven that run myself. Before I was, when I first started at UCAT, I drove that run. I can tell you, I agree with you 100%. One of the challenges on that route is that it's 55 miles an hour, especially during the fall, winter, and even spring seasons, when it's darker. And you're coming down the road, and all of a sudden you're going 55 miles an hour. You're driving a 35,000-pound vehicle, and even if you're going 45, you come around the corner, and all of a sudden there's a person with a black sweatshirt on and black pants, and you see a hand out there to try to stop. Can be challenging, and When a driver has been on the route for a long time, I can also tell you from personal experience that you get to know the passengers. You know where they get on and off. You get to know them by name. And sometimes after a certain period of time of driving the same run, you don't even have to talk. You know where they're getting on. You know where to stop. But unfortunately, with call-outs, with vacations, with things happening, and drivers have to be switched around, sometimes a driver is not 100% familiar, and it does take a little bit of time, as you can imagine, for someone to become acclimated to the idiosyncrasies of each run, and they do exist.
100%. I think that you know, we can come up with some solutions just to help that. And I know I mentioned it before that if there was a way, and I know that the drivers can't look at their tablets, but if there was a way that a passenger in those situations, I know we can call and go, you know, but there isn't always cell service. But even to, like, before you leave home when you have Wi-Fi, you can, you know, ping your location where you're going to get picked up at the time, you know, half an hour before the bus is going to be there or whatever. You know, something just so that it makes it facilitates new drivers knowing that there's somebody down the road. So they know to on a very dangerous road, pull over, and especially in the, all, you know, bad weather and stuff. They're great. I really appreciate the drivers. I feel for the ones that are thrown in there and don't realize what they're thrown into is all I'm saying.
Okay.
We've had times where we handed out reflective wristbands. We gave out flashlights.
I love my keychain with all the things to change the. That's a great thing. Yeah, I loved it.
The way that we do it now, and it's the safest way, is when someone calls into dispatch. Dispatch radios the driver. The driver doesn't have to really have any other input except for a quick 10-4 on the radio to acknowledge, watch for a passenger here or on this road or whatever, and that's what we found the safest way to be. So a lot of it depends on what the rider's input's going to give, especially in that area, especially with that speed and the challenges that are coming that way. But yeah.
So it's like the GPS pin could go in on the to the dispatch, you know. It doesn't have to go to the driver, go to the dispatch, just another way.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Joe, go ahead.
Tony, just a quick question or two and then a thought. Who's the liaison that you send off for union negotiations? I mean, it wouldn't be you, but do you know who the UCAT should have at least one? I wouldn't be surprised if they had two or three,
You mean admin or as a shop steward for the union?
Well, during negotiation, yeah, probably be the shop steward that would go off.
The union shop steward is one of Will's employees, Elena DeSico. However, for administration, the admin part of it, I'm not sent over there, and none of our admin staff, but as far as our union rep in the building, it's Elena DeSico.
Well, but you mentioned before we were talking about different things in the union contract, including pay. Right now, the unions, the CSEA is out of contract and for a while. And they've been getting together, and every department sends one to two or three, depending on the size. DPW sends several to go negotiate on behalf of whichever department.
Drivers.
Yeah. So I was just making sure someone is over there and involved.
They've sent out surveys to everyone there. Everyone has filled them out, given them back to her. Whether she goes or not, I have no idea.
Yeah, and that's got nothing to do with you. I've long thought, and this doesn't have anything to do with you either, I don't think CAT's best served by the CSEA. DPW, DSS, it's too large. Nothing specific is rarely done. The legislature had to get involved to do that to go from 8 to 10, as you mentioned. That wasn't even the union that did that for them. And it doesn't appear to me that the CSEA is ever going to do much specifically for you, Kat, but that's a talk for another day, and for your drivers to get together on. I think they'd be better off with the Teamsters or something. But as far as salary, go ahead and finish, Tony. Then I'll make.
I was just going to say, when they come to me and ask me those questions, I do direct them and say you need to take that up with your union rep. I can't
Yeah, no, that's not you.
I can tell them till I'm blue in the face that I think that drivers need a raise. Do I think everybody in UCAT needs a raise? Yes.
And that brings me to my last point, which maybe the committee could consider. We kind of struck out as a county, the legislature and the exec side of things with the latest salary study. We didn't get much out of it. It looks like firm, for whatever reason, didn't do a great job. It wouldn't be the hardest thing for us to do. I'd be willing to be a part of it, but perhaps salary study with some recommendations coming from this committee would be something that would be useful, especially with a CSEA that, you know, a union representing UCAT, like I mentioned, that represents so many other parts of the county that are completely different from UCAT. So many of these departments don't get, I think there is times where we need to portion out certain departments and give huge raises, and other departments don't need nearly as much. And I think UCAT's one that got a little something but could use a lot more, but they're not going to get the attention that they're going to need to get because of the way we have this structured with the CSEA, overseeing everything from DSS to DPW. And it probably wouldn't be that hard for us to sit down. We do have to take into consideration fringe and retirement and mm-hmm. whatnot, but we could easily compare to surrounding counties, other, you know, municipal drivers, and then private, you know, schools and any private industry we have. And we could probably come up with some recommendations that might help. The contract is going to be out now, and it might be a way for us to get the drivers and some other people in UCAT what they need. It wouldn't be that hard to do, and it just hasn't been done because the firm we hired didn't do it.
I also feel that, you know, the other departments, they come in at 7 and they're done at 3, but UCAT could use their own section in the CSEA contract. And that's what we did when I worked for the city of Kingston. City Bus ended up having their own section apart from DPW because we worked off hours as opposed to DPW and all of the other departments working their normal 7 to 3, 9 to 5. We come in at 4:45 in the morning and they're there till 11 o'clock at night. So it's a little bit different than someone who comes in at 7 to 3, or, you know, we have to staff all those hours with, you know, people on call. It's a lot.
you're dealing with the public in a way that a lot of the rest of the county is not always, in a lot of other departments. And from what I hear at times, certain routes especially, they're dealing with quite a bit. You know, on occasion, a driver even gets assaulted. And
we've had 2 or 3 assaults so far.
Yeah. And that's one of the byproducts of having so much ridership, you know, that drivers are dealing with these things. And I'd love to have this committee weigh in on that. Maybe it would help to ring. And now would be the time, because over the next couple of months, the CSEA is going to be negotiating with the county. And right now, there's not a lot that UCAT has. In fact, as this group gets together with these shop stewards, I was told that there's a couple of departments that are asked to leave the meeting sometimes because they get frustrated. I think that's outrageous. And I believe UCAT was one of the departments that I heard at times isn't even allowed in on the meeting because they're frustrated and they want more. So it's just, once again, when you have as many people as you have in DPW, when you have as many people as you have in DSS, the smaller departments are not always going to get the attention they need in the union contracts. And Tony, I totally understand. It's got nothing to do with you, but it could have, I mean, it has something to do with you because the byproduct of those contracts affects your ability to have drivers and what these drivers end up doing. But I do think it's something this committee could deal with, and doing our own salary study, I think, would be interesting. And I don't think it'd be all that difficult. It would be a tool that could be used for the drivers in particular to perhaps get what they deserve in this contract that's up right now.
I just want to interrupt. It is 7:28 and this meeting is supposed to go until 7:30, but we could extend it if the members would like to extend. Do we still have a quorum?
There was a point that Gemma put or Dylan put in the chat for Gemma, it seems important that we get to.
Yes. So, okay, let's vote on extending for another, we'll say half an hour. We don't have to use the whole half hour. All in favor? Anyone opposed?
And to address Gemma's question, yeah?
Yeah. So we are deviating from the agenda, which I don't have a huge problem with, but I'm just happy we're having such a great, lively conversation. But yeah, I just wanted to see, Tony, do you want to quickly respond to Joe and then we'll move on?
To Joe's last question.
Yeah, to what Joe said. Or if you have anything else you wanted to say, otherwise we're going to move on.
I'm good if you're good with that, Joe.
Okay. That's definitely something we'll put in the agenda for next time. Okay, Gemma is questioning why there's no paratransit on Sunday. First of all, Gemma, I think who should we be asking this question? I think Tony is one person, but I think there's definitely some other people who, you know, are kind of making those decisions. So,
or if it is someone else, who do we need to, I guess I could say that.
You could ask me. You could ask me. So right now, have you tried to make a paratransit appointment on a Sunday?
They tell me there is none. There is no paratransit.
Who told you that?
The bus drivers. And I've tried to do it when I, you know, call up to make an appointment, and there's no.
So if you can call and you need one on Sunday, it has to be within, you know, the routes that we're running, because paratransit runs parallel to the regular route service, because it would be the NPL, the KPL, and the UPL, because those are the only routes that we run. So if you did need to go somewhere in those areas, you could request paratransit service, and we would just call in the driver for overtime for that day.
So you said the KPL.
Who did you talk to?
I honestly couldn't even remember.
You know what? I'm going to find out the information they're giving out, and then I will get back to you in the next meeting about that.
No problem. Yeah, this was a while ago, though, just to be honest, that I had, you know, wondered about that, and it was that they don't run it. So you said, wait, the KPL, the UPL, and the
NPL.
Okay. I would be going somewhere in Kingston. I wouldn't be going out. That I know of, but I appreciate it. No, this was honestly a while ago when I inquired about that. So I couldn't say exactly who it was, because I said okay and just, you know what I mean, wondering why, but I didn't push the issue because I was like, I guess not. You know, I guess they just don't have. But
I won't even use names. I'm just going to ask what they
say. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, the person, I mean, and I'm not saying it like that.
No.
I don't recall.
It's good to know because, you know, I don't call in to make appointments, so I don't hear what you're told on the other end. And right now, we are training new people for our scheduling. So, once the route optimization study is done, we are looking for software. So you will be able to.
Definitely no one knew, because like I said, Christina's the best ever.
Isn't she good?
She's awesome. But I definitely, it was a while ago, so I just kind of gave up. I was like, it could have been 2 years ago, but I just said, okay.
I promise I will look into that.
I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. From the comments, Dylan wanted to reiterate Gemma's question. I'm just going to paraphrase. It would be amazing if there was a feature on the UCAD app to rapidly flash your phone used to hail the bus in New Paltz in front of the YWCA by turning my flashlight on and off. An in-app option to put a pin down for pickups would be amazing, but would have a learning curve on both sides. I'm sure it wouldn't be a perfect system. Kathy Nolan, so that's a great solution. Laura said, with AI and new technologies, can a person waiting on the route sign in so the driver knows a passenger is waiting through the GPS locator, what Bridget just said? Tony said, no, we do not have that technology right now.
I also don't know if, you know, our drivers have to pay attention to the road. So I don't know that pinning their tablets or something like that is the way to go, because that's a distraction for them to look down and read them. The tablets are used more to, you know, do the boardings and alightings and also show where they're at. So we have the tablets, they're programmed to show where the bus goes. That pings into our bus app, which also dispatch can look up, and instead of calling the driver and having them reach for the radio constantly, we can look up their location and just tell somebody on the phone where they're at when they call in. So I think that having too many distractions on the tablet would not be a good thing.
I get that, Tony. I was wondering if it could go to dispatch, that so that then they, however they communicate with the driver that's safe, they could say, because some people don't have cell service to call or Wi-Fi. Like, they can connect with the app on the when they have Wi-Fi when they're home, but they can't call because
so
people up here don't have cell service. Like, literally, not like certain people, like everybody.
You know, I think in I just think that too many distractions for the drivers are not good. You know, even reaching for the radio to answer dispatch on a constant basis, because it's not just one or two calls that comes in a day. I can tell you that I work in dispatch. I come in at like sometimes 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and I'll cover dispatch in the morning, and it's just constant, constant, constant. So for a driver to be reaching for their radio every couple of minutes is not really something that I would want them to do.
Right. Except that this is a rural route, and it's not every couple of minutes. It's like every
five or six miles. They call. And we do alert the drivers if they call. We'll say, you know, you'll have somebody waiting at the motel or at, I don't know, ShopRite or where they call all day.
Yes,
okay.
I understand.
You know,
I see Laura's Bluetooth, hands-free. They're not allowed to have earbuds in their ears.
I do want to reiterate, I would love to get a driver onto this committee and hear, you know, having their opinion would be even more valuable than Tony's on hearing them. And I'm pretty sure on that one, I'd probably hear something very similar. But I hope I know we're running out of time, but before we end the meeting, what is our plan for that last spot and how do we get a driver in it?
That's a good question. All right, let's come back to that. Have to go through the comments. When the driver classification was raised from 8 to 10, it did create a compression issue. Phil and I tried to adjust that, said Laura, but CSEA was resistant. They wanted pay raises across their respective departments, which would have been contractual interference, including BNG, UCAT, DPW, etc. Okay, I think that's it. Dylan nominated Izzy, and Tony said, I will tell him. So that would be great.
We can actually, if you want a driver on the committee, we can put out some sort of a memo to them and let them see. And honestly, they work so much, but I don't know if you would prefer, even if there's like maybe five drivers and then have a rotating committee member or something like that.
Yeah, and we might have to adjust month to month the time of the meeting. I mean, there's 12:30 to 9:30 shifts. We might have to do an 11 o'clock in the morning meeting or something, depending on who the driver is, end up with that month or consistently.
Right.
But that sounds great to me to start the process, and by next month, hopefully we get something going and at least have somebody here.
I think that would all, I second that, Joe. I think it would also be a great idea to get the drivers, like the different drivers from like that do different routes, because they probably all have different, you know, ideas and or just different feedback. So I think that would be kind of good.
They might have different opinions. I'm sure they do.
Exactly.
Oh, I agree.
That'd be a great idea.
Yep. Keith said that, yeah, time's going to be an issue for quorum. Yeah, so that's a good point. Rotating drivers would allow for more perspectives to be communicated. So even just 15 to 30 minutes for the drivers to vocalize any concerns, opinions would be priceless. I know they're busy and this is a volunteer position, said Dylan. But, you know, also it could be, there could be like a separate meeting where we don't necessarily have to have a quorum, but we talk to the drivers and then report back to this meeting. And then, you know, if they're not an official member, maybe they could be getting paid for that time as well. That's my thought. So that might be easier than changing the meeting time. To have a separate meeting could potentially work better, I think. Okay.
I mean, it's like we're making an invitation to the drivers to join this dialogue and participate in this. So, you know, maybe they could have a little coalition or something, or do something, you know, we could make it easy for them to participate in some sort of cyclical thing would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should really try to make clear to the drivers that they're always welcome to come to this meeting. And, you know, I think they should be paid to come, in my opinion. I don't know if that would be possible. Okay, anything else about that? We actually have a couple more agenda items. Just wanted to talk about really quick. Tony's going to have to jump off in 5 minutes. Okay. Bus Buddy program update. Tony, do you have any updates on that?
The Bus Buddy?
I think it was kind of the person who kind of rides
along.
Bus
steward?
Bus steward, yep.
We've had a stack of applications, and they're being looked over through the exec's office. And right now, we haven't hired anyone or interviewed anybody yet.
Okay.
Some are pretty much not qualified. There are some that may possibly be qualified.
Now, Tony, are you concerned that, you know, I had a guy, it's a childhood friend, highly intelligent guy. He rides UCAT daily. And he was telling me the other day, he said, look, Joe, there's two kinds of drivers to survive, especially on the tougher routes. You either got to be kind of stern, kind of no nonsense, or you have to be like, try to be their friends, because there are people they're dealing with on certain routes that are difficult, which is one of the main reasons we're doing this, if not the entire reason. And now you're going to get to a point where you have a driver with a certain kind of style that controls a bus. And now you're going to have this person on here, and you're even saying it, some of these people aren't even qualified. Who are we putting on the bus? Now they got two jobs to, you know, govern the bus riders themselves, and to kind of govern this person that's now going to be there with no real qualifications. They have no official uniform or title, really. You could end up at times maybe even in a worse situation. I don't know what we're doing here with this bus steward, to be honest.
So
we're not talking about hiring the unqualified people, I think is the
right. And
go ahead and let Tony answer the question. Thanks, Kat.
So I think that those are positions that the legislator put into our department. I don't think they will be uniformed, and they will go through some sort of training. So I think that the applications that we're going to look at now are people that, I mean, have some sort of, we've received some that people have some sort of security background, and I know that they're going to use them to basically de-escalate or help the driver out. So I'm skeptical a little bit of how it will turn out, but for the most part, I'm willing to try it because right now something has to be done.
Which is why I thought, and I, while we voted on it, I was one of a few legislators that really felt strongly that it should be some kind of security guard in a uniform. I mean, you're dealing with people, you know, drinking. I mean, sometimes you have to let it go. I've talked to several drivers that it's like, I can't tell. I know these people are drinking. As long as they know, they keep it under their coat. They don't let it spill. I have to, I think it's more complicated than a lot of people think what these drivers are dealing with on a daily basis. And now we're putting some other civilian in there. What are they, you know, I think it could end up undermining the driver that has done a good job of job. I do want more help, but if we're going to do it, I think we should have put a security guard on some of the tougher routes and left it at that. But I think politically, we don't want to put somebody that looks like a police officer on there because there would be political blowback. So we end up doing something that may not end up helping. Once again, everybody, I think this is why we need some drivers at these meetings to really hear from them. And I think the legislature, to be responsible, probably should have had drivers well in on standing committee meetings before we go and put something through like this. And now it's another thing, Tony, you're dealing with when you got a million things in the air and you're trying to hire somebody from a list that doesn't make sense, but that's my opinion.
So I think that one of my suggestions was, I mean, I don't know if we need armed guards on the buses, right? But
not armed.
I had suggested that maybe if the police officers would come to the plaza, right? They don't have to ride the bus, but just have like a presence, right? Get on the bus, say hi to everybody, and then maybe that would deter some of the things that are going on there. Like, I'm not gonna deny that people sell drugs on the bus. You know, the drivers know that, and I think that just by having a police presence say hello to everybody would work. But also, having the bus steward on the bus in the situations where the bus driver got assaulted or, you know, they needed help, say somebody needed Narcan or something like that, that will help. But because there's two of them, they're going to have to rotate every route. And keep in mind that with day and night shifts, we run 26 routes a day.
Oh, no. I think we're temporarily out of quorum.
Okay.
We are out of, yeah.
Just in closing, Tony, we just mentioned Narcan, assaults on the bus drivers, and known drug dealing. But we don't want to have somebody that has a security guard uniform on there. I mean, we just need to use, and I think more agreeing with you, but I'm talking to, I guess, retroactively talking to some of my colleagues that didn't really think this through and don't really ride the bus or talk to the people that do.
I have a question. Who actually created, who was the legislator behind creating this position?
Bill Erner?
Phil and Greg McCullough, you know, through conversations with Phil. And it rapidly was a consensus position. None of us knows the best way to do it before doing it. And there's pluses and minuses to different approaches. So I think that looking for the best qualified people among those applicants and trying it. And then I think you can get a sense of which routes have had the most problems, which routes, which times. And so you make a good first guess as to how this will be helpful. The legislature was open to the idea that more stewards might be helpful because we could hire stewards that might make the experience of driving the UCAP bus more pleasant, and then we have a better chance of getting more drivers and being able to do the routes that we want. That was the thinking behind it from those of us who supported it.
Can I just add a note to from my experience working in gun violence prevention and the power of community-based anti-violence programs? And maybe there's a way that on the various routes that there can be some outreach. There must be some local organizations that support, you know, anti-violence projects, that know their community, that are aware of, you know, and certainly the community of people in transition, between homes and having to be shuttled to various motels to live. I mean, that's a community too, but like how can the community participate in some of these, you know, in this initiative of having somebody? Because I really think having camaraderie and initiative for community to respect each other has a lot more power than any kind of uniform or star or officer, especially now. So I just think maybe there's some community organizations that might want to partner up with UCAT in considering, you know, ways that the pool of resources for these people who I think I agree would be a great resource on the buses. I just don't think they should be in uniform.
Bridget, I second your motion, what you're saying, because you know what? And again, I'm not condoning violence. I mean, I'm not on any bus where I've ever seen that before, but actually vice versa, but independent of that, I think that you never know what someone's going through. If you haven't stepped in their shoes, you never know. And for someone, and I'm not saying everyone in a shelter is dealing with this, but I'm just saying, I mean, if you are in a shelter, you pretty much have lost everything, whether your fault, no, it doesn't make a difference. So I'm just saying you're still at your, probably at your rock bottom, you know, and or close to it. So I think that, you know, and again, I'm not saying no one there having authority. I'm not saying that, but someone, like almost like someone's going to go around and like talk to someone and see how they're doing and just, you know, lighten up the mood, because you never know. And again, I'm not saying drug dealing. I'm not saying it. I have not been on those buses, so I don't know. I'm not going to say that, but I think that the presence of just someone in a uniform is going to be more, more intimidating, but not a pleasant experience. But if you have someone in addition to that who's going and help, like, you know, whether it's volunteer or, you know, from some nonprofit organizations who just want to make sure that people are feeling okay, I think that's super, super, super important. So sorry about that. So yeah, I think that would be an awesome idea, actually.
I'm just going to add that I think that maybe the bus drivers need to have a say in that also. And I personally would like to hear their side of it. And I know that there are drivers right now that don't want to drive certain routes for what's going on. And while it is nice to have, you know, conversations with everybody, I really do feel that a little bit of fear needs to be put into them if they're anticipating punching the driver in the face. Or, we have cameras on our buses, several cameras on these buses, and it's just sickening, like, how those bus drivers are treated on some of the routes. And, you know, it's a hard thing to weigh out of when you watch your bus driver get punched in the face three times. You want to see a police officer come and take that person away. You know what I mean? Like, it's awful. Awful. And we watch it. Will can confirm. We watch it once it happens. And it's not a pretty sight. It's not a pretty sight. And they do it for small reasons, like, why'd you open the back door? Why didn't you open the back door? So it's just, it's so difficult right now. But I hope whatever we do works.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks, Tony, for answering so many questions tonight. And thanks, everyone, for coming. I think we kind of went through the agenda. So, Tony, do you have the link for if drivers want to apply for the committee itself? Do you know where that is on the website?
I do.
Okay, I'll email it to you.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Any last words?
I think normally we would close out the meeting with a first and a second and then a vote, but I think the meeting kind of officially ended when we lost quorum.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost quorum. We did.
Kathy, so, you're good at that stuff. Would we? I don't even think we can.
We can just end by consensus that, no, you could take a vote. Nobody's going to challenge it.
Yeah. Does anyone?
It's bedtime.
I think all those in favor, please leave, is particularly appropriate.
Yeah, you could say if you want, but we're done.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, so much. It's been a really good meeting tonight. And our next meeting is in July. It's on the agenda.
What's the date?
July 22nd. Yep. And that's also going to be on Zoom.
Okay.
Only. Okay. I think the Zoom seems to be working well so far. All right. Thank
you. If ever you want to have a meeting at UCAT like every once a quarter, we're welcome to share our training room.
That would be a cool idea. Yeah. I'd like to
give you a tour of the facility. I don't know if anybody's been up there. But we did some, real quick, I'll just add, we did some really great things with the electrification. We have solar panels on the roof, a new generator for backup. New buses are coming in, and our Will does a great, great job out in the mechanics, with the mechanics. So if you ever want to come speak to some drivers, just let us know.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, everyone. Guys.
Great.
Have a great night.
Have a great night, everyone.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.